In reflecting on today's readings, the passage that came to my mind was that famous prophecy from Isaiah 55, where the Lord says through the prophet, "My ways are not your ways, nor are my thoughts your thoughts. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so high are my ways above your ways and my thoughts above your thoughts." It's a great reminder to us that we're not on the same level as God. We don't think like him and we don't act like him. And so when we're surprised by how he does things, that's the reason why, because he's thinking in a higher plane. Maybe the reason why this came to mind is because today's readings speak about God's choice, God's free choice of certain people whom he calls to serve him. In the gospel, it's the choice of the 12, the apostles. And then in the first reading, we see once again Saul and David, both of whom were chosen by God, but they find themselves in conflict. So we reflect on this surprising and sometimes very mysterious fact that God chooses people whom we would not choose, or he chooses for reasons that we don't understand. But it's very deliberate. It's clear in the gospel. Jesus is very deliberate about choosing these 12 men. He summons them, and they come to him. Okay, he doesn't force them. He calls them and they come, so that's to their credit. But other than that, they seem to have no other qualifications that make sense to us. Well, maybe I should say the other qualification is that they're men, and Jesus chose only men, not women, to be apostles. So that wasn't any credit to them. That they were born that way. So it wasn't like they were better. That's God, again, God's free choice. So here he calls them and they come, and then he appoints them, he names them so that they be with him, so that he can send them, and he appoints them, and then he calls them by name. It's all Jesus. They're the recipients of this remarkable choice, of this call. Now, I say it's surprising, and I say this because if we know who these 12 men are, we know that there's nothing particularly appealing about them. They're not bad guys. They're just ordinary fellows. They're fishermen for the most part. There's a tax collector. There's a couple of guys who are sons of thunder. That doesn't sound like a very good choice for apostles, meaning they're hot-headed. They explode easily, make a lot of noise. That's James and John. Then there's a zealot. And then there's a traitor, a betrayer. So God's ways are not our ways. He chooses people we wouldn't choose. He thinks about people in a way that is not how we think about them. Now, we're also free. God makes free choices. We're also free. We can accept our own vocation or not, and we can accept how God chooses others or not. But if we don't choose what God chooses, we place ourselves outside his authority. We place ourselves against him. So it's very important to put together this mysterious and sometimes baffling choice of God and the necessity that we accept whom he chooses. I think this is clearly illustrated in the first reading. God chose Saul to be the first king. Saul turned out to be a disaster, and it gets worse and worse as time goes on, as he's consumed with jealousy. God also chose David, and David here is the victim of Saul's pursuit. You can see how extreme Saul gets here. He has 3,000 picked men from all Israel. I mean, these are the best soldiers he can find. And he's going after David, who has done nothing to him. In fact, David is willing to serve him. So it's so extreme. Saul has declared David to be his mortal enemy. He must be hunted down and killed. And it's important that we get that. That shows how evil Saul's intent is. And yet, God chose this man and made him king. So this puts David in the strange circumstance of having to oppose the king in order to save his life, and yet not disrespect him. He doesn't agree with him. He doesn't think he's doing the right thing. He thinks what he's doing is evil, but he won't go against God's choice. And they meet here in the cave. It's like accidental meeting in the CR. Saul is in there to relieve himself, and David is in there hiding. David cuts off a part of Saul's mantle. Now, sometimes people wonder, what exactly did he cut off there? Was it a tassel? Was it an insignia? Was it something to represent Saul's authority? Or was it just the closest piece of cloth? We don't know. But David regretted it afterwards. He should not even have done that much, because that's why some people think it might have been an insignia of his. You know, he's the king, so when he wears a mantle, it's a royal mantle. And so to cut the mantle is to attack the sovereignty. So David regrets it. After Saul has finished what he was doing, he goes back out. David follows him out and says, "Wait a minute, Saul." He bows down before Saul, "My lord, the king." And then the truth of what has happened comes out. Saul is against David, but David is not against Saul. Saul is extremely against David. David is not at all against Saul. Now, I like to focus on David here because he teaches us how to think about and how to respond to authorities chosen by God whom we might not agree with. It might even hate. You might even think that they're evil. He says, "Here's the evidence. I had every opportunity to kill you. I didn't touch you." Then he says, David says, I place myself under the authority of the Lord. Let the Lord choose. I'm not going to touch you. I'm just letting God decide what he's going to do with this. So it's a way of touching Saul's conscience. And then David says something I find quite striking. He says, "Whom are you pursuing? Against whom are you on campaign? Whom are you pursuing? A dead dog or a single flea?" David is describing himself here. "I'm nothing to you. 3,000 men, and what is this? Why are you making such a big thing out of this?" I could see David trying to bring Saul back to reason. Now, as I was reflecting on this, I thought of a case. I'm a little hesitant to use this as the example, but it seems to be as a way of highlighting David's greatness. I'm just going to throw this out to you. I hope it's not too distracting. I'm thinking of the conflict between Pope Francis and the traditionalists. Most people aren't paying any attention to this, but you know, Pope Francis last year put some very heavy restrictions on the traditionalists, the people who prefer the old Latin Mass. As I say, most people aren't affected, and most people don't even notice, but the people who are affected are really, really hurt and angry. They think that Pope Francis has unfairly targeted them, And they feel like they feel like David being hunted down by the Pope, and they feel like the Pope has overdone it in trying to crush them. Now, the reason why I say this is not a very good analogy, because it makes the Pope look bad, and that's not my intention. I'm not putting the Pope in the place of Saul, but I do want to put the traditionalists in the place of David, because those who feel like the Pope is against them are put on the spot. How are they going to respond? Some of them, predictably enough, lash out and attack the Pope. Some of them decide that he's not really the Pope. Some of them have all kinds of nasty things to say about him. They leave the church, or they form their own separatist groups. That's obviously not the right response. Some of them, though, do what David does. They say, well, he is the Pope. We don't agree with him. We're not going to submit like any more than David submits himself to being killed. We're not going to just lie down and be killed, but we're not going to disrespect the authority of the Pope. We disagree with him, we think what he's doing is evil, but we will not lay a hand on him. We're not going to remove ourselves from the authority of God. We'll let God be in charge. And that's, I think, a good lesson. Now, most people don't feel particularly attacked by the Pope or by bishops or priests, but sometimes we will have this experience of being on the receiving end of persecution, even by the church, or it seems that way to us. This is where the lesson of David is so important to us. We are not to leave our thoughts on the human level. We're to raise up our thoughts to God's thoughts, even though we don't understand how God thinks, we don't know his ways, but we can submit to him in faith. As David does. I don't know why Saul is chasing me. I don't think it's right. I'm going to run away from him, but I'm not going to go against God. I'm not going to go against his choice. So that's the lesson here. And it applies to David dealing with the irrational Saul. It applies to everybody, the church, in relating to the 12 apostles. It applies to all of us who are called to respect God's ways and God's thoughts. His ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so high are his ways above our ways and his thoughts above our thoughts. So the right response is, Lord, your will be done. Even if I don't understand it, even if I don't like it, I submit to you. And I submit to the right, to the people whom you choose and give to whom you give authority.